The information presented is for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are not necessarily the opinions of any Daikin company. This information should not be confused for accounting, legal, medical, or other professional advice. Please seek advice from a qualified professional for any specific questions.
Welcome to the Accelerated HVAC Success Program. My name is Ben Middleton. I'm the National Sales Training Manager for the Goodman, Amana, and Daikin brands. Today, we're joined here with Tom Whitman with the HVAC Coaching Corner. Tom, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Tom, the first question we ask everybody, how in the world did you get into the HVAC industry?
Well, it's, you know, when I finished high school, I got a football scholarship. So I blew my knee out. So that wasn't on the radar. So my other thing I was going to do is be a bricklayer with my brother. But after a summer of that, I thought, maybe I should do something different. So HVAC seemed to be the right thing to do because it's a variety of different skill sets, and that's really what drew me to the HVAC field.
So, Tom, you've done many things within your career in the HVAC industry. You've owned your own company. You've managed companies. You've coached companies. When you look back at your history, what would you say has been some of the most challenging things that you've done in the industry and probably some of the most rewarding things that you've done in the industry?
The most challenging thing has been my biggest failure was going bankrupt. It was it would have been 2006. I went into business. We're doing pretty well. You know, I knew how to sell. I knew operations very well. And as a general manager, I knew what a profit and loss sheet looked like, but didn't do much on the balance sheet. So there was a gap there. We built the business. The first year, we did a little bit over $1 million, which was pretty good. Then we got involved in some commercial work, which, you know, that's kind of in our forte. And, you know, like any entrepreneur, we had a chance to have it work on a huge project. So had an SBA loan, and we funded the company on loans instead of cash, okay, and a line of credit. So we had an opportunity to do something. We went all in on it. And then, that's when the, 2008 happened. So I was in the middle of five projects around Indianapolis at that time. And, I get a phone call from three of the general managers and, the JCs, right?
Yeah.
And, the three of them said they couldn't pay me for 90 days. So that pretty much wiped out my cash. Well, it wasn't my cash anyway, because I was into the bank. So what do I do? And I don't tell Carol about this. I leveraged my house. So I knew we could make it. And then the bank called after the crash. And they told me that even though you're making your payments, even if you're high risk and you have a week to pay off your line of credit and 2 weeks to pay off your note. And just like that, I was out of business. And, you know, there's a lessons learned on the business side, but the more difficult thing was the emotional toll it had on everybody, right? So it took me about 2 years to get over that, maybe two or three. And what I learned from that was amazing, though, once I got on this other side of, you know, thinking I'm a loser and all these other things that goes into your mind when something like that. And I met a man that I absolutely respect and still in touch with every day. His name is Larry Janeski, probably one of the most amazing people. Him and Fred O'Harwick were probably two of the most instrumental people in my life when it came to HVAC. I learned a lot from Larry. He had the same path. The only difference is he's about my age, and I think when I knew him, he was a millionaire. I think he's a billionaire now. And in Connecticut. And he taught me some basic fundamentals. Had I known then, I would be a contractor still. They're very simple guidelines, but what's really interesting is, had I not gone through that part of my life of failing, I couldn't be doing what I'm doing today.
Hmm.
And that's the most gratifying thing I have right now is, I mean, I've helped, I shouldn't say I've helped, I've guided a lot of home companies out of bankruptcy based on the things that I've learned. And I think I have a clear understanding what small struggling companies go through because I've lived through it myself.
Hmm.
And if any of you out there are struggling right there, I'm going to give you one bit of advice, and please understand that. All you have to do is understand that it's not necessarily your fault. It's a normal thing that happens. But if you learn the mistake, I'm sorry, if you learn the lesson and forget the mistake and move on, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep rolling that tape in your mind that you're not worthy, you're not smart enough, and all this other nonsense, just get over it, right? I think failing and learning is the way we get better if we allow ourselves to do that. And that's one of the hardest parts, is the emotional toll it takes on families. The longer we dwell on that, the more difficult it becomes to go out on the other side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So you have had the privilege to work with probably hundreds, if not thousands, of companies in the course of your career.
Yes.
And all of these different companies that you've been a part of coaching, mentoring, and helping to really turn their businesses around. What would you say are some of the consistent mistakes that you see that that contractors make?
Well, oversights, mistakes. The first thing is your cash position. Because when I engage with a company, the first thing I say, let's take what your cash spread is.
Mm.
So cash spread is a broad thing. So we take their receivables, what they owe, you know, people that owe them the cash, and then subtract the overhead from that. And what you get at the end of that, they're either going to have a negative number, which means they're in trouble,
mm-hmm.
or they have a positive number, which means, okay, they're not in trouble yet. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the first indicator. So somebody that's in trouble, we just stop right there and we figure out where their break even is. And then we get to work to increase cash. Next, we take a look at the balance sheets to see what kind of debt they have. So you want to increase cash and reduce your debt. Okay. Number one. And if you're in that situation, you don't need to be doing anything else. Okay. Then we immediately look at pricing. Are we priced properly? Are we performing properly? Is operations where it needs to be? And we get that tightened up. And those companies that do this, right, with some guidance, within 60 days, all of a sudden, we see some meaningful things happen. And then we can go to once. So once they're stabilized, that's when we start having a lot of fun. You know, then we start talking about strategy and going into the next, you know, phase of it and how to start scaling the company responsibly without getting into the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because take my word for it, that was very, very painful. And I would hate to see anybody go through that.
So it's such a simple concept. And I've heard you, you know, preach that in front of a room full of contractors, increase cash, and, you know, decrease debt. And it seems like such a simple, fundamental thing. I mean, it's very intuitive. Everybody goes in their mind, well, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. But
right.
I think it's a lot harder to actually do those two things. So when you're talking about increasing cash, I think a lot of people start to think about, well, I need to generate more leads, or I need to sell more jobs, or I need to charge more.
Right.
Where do you start with that when somebody's looking at, you know, how do I increase the cash in the business?
Okay, that's a great thought. I start from the organic side, right? Mm-hmm. We take a look at their team. Now, It also this also it really a determination is how big the company is. If I'm working with a company that's doing 500,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. Man, it's all hands on deck, to go out and make sure that we're past break even. That's it. There's no departmentalization. Everybody's doing whatever it takes to get past that roadblock and build cash. There's no focus on anything else. So we're building the skills to do that. It's for sales, install, service. It's all for one, right? When they get past 1 to 1.5 million, okay, now we're going to back up a little bit. Now we can put some strategies in place, right? So, and now we can have a technician that's out there full time in front of customers, you know, and maybe an install crew and a salesperson at about 1 or 1.5. Now we can start to scale, right? But you can't scale without cash in the bank, right? So if they're doing that, and if they're doing the cash spread, they have enough money to buy a truck instead of leasing it or fleecing it, you know, if you will. So just doing the due diligence, understanding where they are and giving them a benchmark to work towards is really important. The second thing is tracking everything, you know, on a weekly basis. The second thing, a lot of companies, I don't know why, they're not in the habit of tracking, right? So if I have one technician out there, I want to know, you know, what his revenue per hour is, you know, what the lead turnovers are and the skill sets. Do we see how many maintenance agreements do we sell and things like that? If it isn't tracked, it's not going to happen.
Right, right.
You know, and that's a new concept to a lot of companies. All right. So the smaller company, that's kind of a high level of how we get to the next step. The companies that are up around 5 million or so and struggling, that's usually because of structure. Okay. And let's say I'm a $5 million company and I need a service manager. Well, what's that going to do? That's going to increase overhead, right? Mm-hmm. So a great strategy there is have team leaders. A $5 million company probably has, let's say, 8 technicians. Well, you could have 2 teams now, a leader for this one and a leader for this one. And as you start building out your team by following the process and by following, you know, the lead turnovers and things like that, all of a sudden, once you get to your third leg, that'll push you up to about 8 million, maybe 9 million. And now you're ready to bring on a full-time manager that manages the team leaders.
Hmm.
So there's no chaos. You're keeping your overhead low, and you're also interviewing a future service manager based on how well they manage their team.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, sky's the limit until you get into the bigger companies that way.
So it's so interesting you bring that up. I see one of the failures that we have in our industry is typically you take the largest companies that are out there, and you ask them to come speak at an industry event, and they're thinking, okay, I've got a $20 million structure, and they're giving advice to that, you know, $1 million contractor
right. That's
trying to figure out what to do. And the advice of what how a $20 million company may increase cash is completely different than what a $1 million company.
Completely different. Or the other thing too, they'll go to some sort of an event. Mm. And they said, you have to have this software. You have to have this. You have to have this. You have to get your marketing. All of a sudden, their cash is gone. Okay. Companies from up to five million can organically produce enough to go to the next level.
Mm.
What I mean by that is, you know, during the busy season, we want to make sure to stay in front of as many customers as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
As those customers come in, we want to prioritize those new customers based on the age of the system.
Mm.
Okay. And we absolutely need to put them on maintenance agreements or flip them into leads.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things. There's going to be plenty of installs, right? Because it's demand season. But if we get them, the ones that decided to restore operation, guess what? If every technician out there sells 250 maintenance agreements, two visits, you will not be slow in the slow times.
Right.
And statistically, they'll be able to turn somewhere from 10 to 15% into sales leads.
Mm-hmm.
Sales leads from technicians, 80, 85% close.
Right.
Right. How many marketing, how much money did they spend in marketing? Zero. And that's organic growth, and the competition has no idea what you're doing. Isn't that cool?
It
gives me goosebumps.
you see, our industry today is just, pumped full of, you need to have SEO and you need to pay-per-click and you need to make sure that you have this software solution.
Right.
How many million-dollar shops have you seen go out and buy, a huge enterprise solution for running their business?
Correct. The strategy has to be there first. And that's it's mind-blowing. They'll spend that much money hoping that a piece of technology is going to save their business.
Mm.
And they get so far away of minding their cash and building their cash that they're not sure what to do.
Now, one of the things you brought up, because it's interesting, there's so many different ways that you can look at the numbers, right? And so you're talking about looking at the balance sheet and looking at cash flow. I've had conversations with other industry experts. We've had Ruth King on here. I've had Gary Ellickson here, and we talk about profitability all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And profitability is important. You need to make sure that you're running a profit. In fact, Ruth wrote a great book, Profit or Wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Because she will talk about how a contractor can have a great gross margin. And still, when you go to that balance sheet, there's a completely other different story being told. How does that happen?
Well, you're talking about me right there, right? Earnings before interest and taxes, right? And also the last one, the how well they manage cash.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just looking at the profit and loss statement, that doesn't tell the whole tale, right? Mm-hmm. That's EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, and how well you manage your cash.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of companies out there that, okay, the profit and loss looks pretty good. I look at the balance sheet and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, their receivables are way out. They're not paying their bills to their vendors. Mm-hmm. They have leases on all of their vehicles. But before you know it, that 10 or 15% is a negative. And that's what did it me in, because I wasn't minding that. So I think the point is, to grow a company, the first thing we need to know is what's our cash spread and how much debt do I have? Those two simple things, and then put a plan in place to reduce debt and increase cash.
Yeah.
Simple. And that's, and I had kudos to Larry Janatsky for teaching me that. And how to do that. I mean, that one thing, I don't care if you're a $20 million company. If you do that one thing, you're going to find things that you otherwise wouldn't find. Here's the biggest reason for that is if they're doing a cash spread Tuesdays and Thursdays or once a day, they're going to know what their profit and loss state is going to, the statement is going to be at the end of that month instead of, 15 days or 30 days or a quarter afterwards. Could you imagine playing a football game and not knowing the score until the next day? You'll know that the score, you'll have a perspective now to see the gaps real time, just like at a sporting event, right? The people up in there looking at the field can see the gaps. If you're not doing a cash spread on a daily basis, you're basically looking at a linear path until that profit and loss statement. And there's a lot of bad things that can happen. But if you're in the moment right there, yesterday this happened, you can solve that problem.
Mm.
And you'll identify things within that that can really save a lot of money and heartache for those contractors.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was always just so eye-opening to me, you and I both teach a class called Operations Accountability. And one exercise that I used to love in there is you would create your chart of accounts, and you're looking at the balance sheet in Operations Accountability.
Right.
And so you got this chart of accounts, and now you're looking at all the expense line by line by line. And I remember, one of the lines that was on there was cell phones. And the question that always come up, how many of you have a cell phone or two or three or four that are sitting in a drawer and are not being used, and you're still paying for service on those?
Right.
You know, it's that type of mindset of really being focused on that line by line expenses. How can I reduce expenses, which is going to increase cash?
Yeah,
right.
You bet.
And
absolutely.
So, you look at those things. Where are we spending money that we shouldn't be spending money, so that we can increase cash? And then ultimately, how can we, Dave Ramsey always talks about, getting into that debt snowball.
You bet.
And starting to just really get rid of the debt.
Right.
And as you this bigger and bigger and bigger, things really start to come together.
Yeah, and when they do start to come together, let's say, we recommend that you have at least 3 to 4 dollars of overhead in the bank for operating capital, right? 3 to 4, maybe sometimes 5, depending upon what types of project you're into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a little bit, and once you do that, the next step is to have enough cash that you can put in a short term, something that's going to appreciate. And when you start doing your budget for the next season, how many trucks will you need? If you follow that path and you're building your cash that way, you won't have to take a loan out. You can buy it outright. And you go through the first cycle, and then when you go to the second or the third cycle, you've got enough cash to purchase 2 or 3 vans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that difficult. It's not that hard to do, but it takes a discipline to do that. And it's, again, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about all the companies that started that journey. Profits and loss statement and a balance sheet can be a confusing thing to understand, but the cash spread, boom, it basically does the same thing. I'm not suggesting that you don't learn about a profit and loss and balance sheet, but if you're treading water, why are you taking a class on how to read a balance sheet? You know what I mean?
Right.
We need to get out there and start increasing cash. And once everything's stabilized, okay, now, here's how to read, right? There's going to be a point in time when that's going to be relevant for them.
Tom, thank you so much for coming out here. I really appreciate you being here. This is such a great topic to be talking about. Do you have any other words of wisdom that you'd like to share to all of the listeners that are out there?
I'm going to default to before. Mistakes are going to be made. Okay, that's the first thing. So learn the lesson and forget the mistake and become a better version of self. If you can manage and have the tenacity to do that, because it's not an easy thing to do, you're going to be fine. But if you choose to be the victim in whatever happens to you, you're going to have a hard road to follow. So all the best to everybody.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate you,
thank you
coming here. For all of you that are out there, if you like this episode, go ahead and hit that like button. Also, make sure that you follow us so you can be informed of all of the other upcoming episodes that we have.